Good evening. We had a very odd kind of homework this last time, and there were four parts of it, which made it very complex. And so it was decided that we would choose one of them, one of the four, to make a kind of focus for the week. They're the best methods, according to this Lojong story. Four practices as the best methods. They're pretty simple, really. Accumulating merit, meaning really surrendering, essentially trusting in what we don't know, emptying ourselves. The second one is laying down evil, which is the very first one of the three precepts. And then the last two, offering to the dons, is offering to the hungry ghosts, to the things that attack us, turning around the negative into something positive. And the last is the same sort of thing. It's the offering to the Dharmapalas, who are the protectors of the teachings. Which doesn't mean that they are in what we would think of as good to us, but are challenging to us and throw us over and over into the truth of things, which often have nothing to do with our pleasure or our indulgences. So the last two are sort of mysterious. Kind of mysterious beings, or ways of talking about the mind as encompassing mysterious creatures, almost, you could say, protectors of teachings. He says, hurls us back into gentleness. That's a very strange way of thinking about. But if we think of the things that happen to us in our life, as we soldier on and take care of everything in a strong-willed way, often we're hurled back into some kind of surrender and humility and even gentleness and kindness. So I think that sums up the four. In a way that we could talk about, that all four of them are pointing to how we are, how we act in the world, and what acts back in us and to us that keeps us on the path, keeps us awake. As Chogyam says, and with the merit one, that we, or the laying down evil deeds, that eventually we just get sick and tired of them. sick and tired of our neurotic actions and just give it up. Give it up and take refuge and commit to the path. So, I don't know about your week. How this might apply to your week in some way, or any week, any of our weeks and years and days. We're always coming up against our foolishness and getting knocked around by life until we soften and open. Wendy?
I couldn't apply it to my life. It says that the logic is you always want pleasure, but what you get is always pain. Why does that happen? It happens because the very act of seeking pleasure brings pain. Did a bad deal because you started at the wrong end of the stick. My life is not like that. It's pretty darn nice. These days. No. So am I supposed to go out and seek pain?
Does it say that?
Well, it's the point of this practice is that you have to sacrifice something rather than purely yearning for pleasure. Block out hope and fear altogether. So you do not hope to gain anything from your practice, and you're not fearful of bad results. It's just talking about practice. It's not talking about life.
Basically, yes, but life also. He's not saying there's no pleasure or we shouldn't have pleasure or be pleasureful, but that's all short-lived, and that is not the point of our practice.
Right.
The great thing about our life and our practice is that we're in such a condition, living this way, we're really at the top of the heap. We have everything that we need, and things are looking pretty good. So it allows us to practice. And having this space, this almost permission by life to practice, because we do have enough to eat and a shelter from the rain, that then we are in a position to open to others and to be willing to suffer for the sake of other people, other beings, willing to go out on a limb and not protect ourselves anymore because we're already protected. We're already cared for. If we were still living out in the park somewhere under a bridge, we wouldn't be able to do this life. So it's about that. Not about us, really. It's about using what this is, the dynamic and power that we're born with, that is freed because of our situation. And with this freedom, we can enact our practice with everyone. Which you do.
I don't think I help too many people. They don't want my help. I mean, they don't want my suggestions. But they do want me to listen to their problems. That's
so there you are. That's a gift. That's part of it too. We have to stay sane as well as well fed and protected. Murray?
So, I had a hard time with the, if I'm suffering, may it be a benefit to others? That's sort of a hard thing. Because, you don't want people walking around feeling sorry for you. It's easier to say, don't worry about it. Right? So, that's a tricky one.
So how do you solve it? What do you do?
Well, I mean, as Wendy was saying, you have to take care of yourself. So if you need something because you're suffering, you can ask for it or whatever. But thinking that it's going to somehow benefit other people is...
I'm not sure he's saying that exactly, is he?
Well, I thought the offering the merit,
Or
maybe that was the priest.
Those little prayers. Yes, accumulating merit. Grant me blessing if it's better to be sick, if it's better to be dead,
yeah.
If it's better to survive. So, that's about accepting whatever happens to us, accepting our sickness if we're sick, or our dying if we're dying, or our survival if we keep on going. And there's some people who'd rather die. They're still here. So that too is a kind of attachment. All of those are asking for a blessing, not to be stuck with those kind of attachments to life or to not life or to wellness, because all of those things are going to knock us down one way or the other, one time or another. And it's a whole lot easier to accept it than to fight it, almost invariably.
But it's not that you get merit for suffering, or
anything. No.
You sort of get points because you're...
Absolutely not. No. No. I think it means... It doesn't mean what I always think merit means, that accumulating merit in this is saying that it's an emptying of our ambition, emptying of our attachment even to our life as a blessing, to see all of those as a blessing. You can see in the retirement homes the people who are attached to their condition and would never ask to accept what they have because it's not pleasant. And the people who do accept what they have, which is the same condition, the same situation, who are absolutely fine with it. So it's not the situation itself, it's the state of mind. It's what we do with what we've got. And the crunchier our life becomes, the more obvious it is that we can decide how attached we're going to be, or how willing we are to abandon our attachments, especially to the self. It seems like to the self, even though really it's to the whole thing. Once we get loose from the attachment, then we know when to be open or when not to be. We know without, as the next one says, enduring a surprise. This one is about whatever's met unexpectedly, whatever shakes us up, what disturbs and distresses us, which he says is often projected on others. You know, you made me fall down, you made me whatever. And instead, this is about meeting whatever's unexpected and join it with meditation. So if we get clobbered, again, it's about the state of mind. Do we bustle up and put on our armor and fight back? sit with it. Meet it with a meditative mind. It's a very different life. It's a very quiet life. But the kind of path that we, or the kind of wake that we leave behind us with this kind of mind is very different from fighting for what's right, fighting for survival, fighting for all the things that we build up around our idea of ourselves. So in this case, then the point is to use the Tonglen practice and just take it in and send it out. So that's the last one. Number 16 is the last of the third point, which is about transforming bad circumstances into the path of enlightenment. So transforming mishaps into the path, driving all blames into one, contemplating the gratefully the kindness of others, realizing that the mind has no origin, no dwelling place, and these four practices of relating to the sacred, getting sick and tired of neurotic or neuroses, invite our obsessions, and stay very aware of our life as something very precious and sacred. Those are the protections and the transformations, the kind of mind that is a suggestion. We don't have to do any of this. This is just someone's insight into what a truly fulfilled life can be, what an enlightened life can be. Not a life that's all holy and special in some kind of way, but present and active, relevant and meaningful. Where we are, to give and accept the meaning of our life. Including the hardships. Anything else?
I have a question of whether people practice with this, with a lojong.
Mm-hmm.
Do you make like tonglen practice part of your daily meditation? Are people doing that? I'm sitting down for 30 minutes, the first 5 is going to be taking and spending, or... I missed the first part of the... I don't know if it's
going to
be on the final.
Okay. Well, the very first one is just—it's very simple for preliminaries, and then the main practice of compassion, generosity, patience, discipline, and all through it's about Tonglen. So whatever we're going through, that's a part of the practice, meditation and Tonglen. First for ourselves and then for others. So I think without that, this is all just words. This comes out of silence and out of a Tonglen practice in the first place. As when you begin to sit down and sense the suffering of others and your own, you have to do something. Something is required of us. Well, let's see if we can well, I'll do this next time, I think. Let's just think about this unexpected. Surprises that shake us up. And actively use Tonglen and see how that is. Including even stubbing your toe. You can take and send for your stubbed toe or for anything. But since this is really the essence of the whole practice, I think this would be very helpful. And see how it relates to this third point about transforming bad circumstances into something different.